Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live for this Monday. We all survived it. The sun was eclipsed. The sun went dark in large parts of America today. I don't know if you're aware of that, Nick. We, us Catholic Answers folks, we went out and looked at the sun through a pinhole. A couple of folks had made a pinhole, and then we looked at a white surface and we saw that the sun was eclipsing, but I couldn't even – we were 57 or 58% occluded here, and I found – it seems to me 42% of the sun is almost like 100% of the sun. It's hard for me to tell when even 60% of the sun is gone. I don't know if I mentioned it, but I'm your host, Cy Kellett, and because of the – well, in part because of the massive eclipse that we had across the country this afternoon, we thought we would discuss miracles in science. An eclipse of the sun is not, of course, a miracle, but many times in the past, eclipses have been seen to be miraculous or divine events, and now we can ask ourselves, well, has science debunked the very idea of miracles? Can science and miracles exist in the same universe? Can you be a person who believes in both science and miracles? 888-318-7884 if you have questions or comments about science and miracles. Our guest today, Dr. Stacy Trosenkos. Dr. Trosenkos earned a bachelor's degree in science from East Texas State University, a doctorate in chemistry from Penn State, and a master's in dogmatic theology from Holy Apostles College and Seminary. She's the author of, most recently, Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. She and her husband, Jose, have 7 children, and they live in Texas. Dr. Trosenkos, thanks for being with us today.
Hello. Thank you for having me back on.
Well, we're privileged to have you back on. Did you get any eclipse where you were in Texas today? Was it like us here?
It was not as dark as I thought it would be. The kids were a little disappointed, but the sun was coming through the leaves over our deck, and my daughter walked out and went, "Oh no, all the toenails I ever picked off are coming
back." What happened with our... So hang on there, Dr. Trosenkos. We seem to have a bad connection.
Me, because it looked like little half moons of toenails everywhere.
Oh.
Okay, 1 second. Hang on 1 second.
Okay. Well, I have to say, I was watching a little bit of the news about the, they were following the eclipse across the country. This was the All-American eclipse, Nick. I don't know if you know that. But so they followed the eclipse across the country. And then I noticed that the people they were having on as guests were, in general, they were scientists or science-ish type folks. And there was all this talk of science and whatnot. And then they would go to the people who had observed or were in the moment observing the full totality of the eclipse. And their response was, as a matter of fact, I was really struck by one young man. It was, "I've never felt so connected to the universe and so connected to all the people around me." And they had I thought, it's interesting that the television news just – when it's something like an eclipse, their just automatic default position is get a scientist on here, get an astronaut on here, and you probably need a poet. You probably need a religious leader or something like that to actually express what is experienced during the eclipse. Stacy, I wanted to ask you, does much science come out of an eclipse, or is that not really – should we think of it more as just a beautiful thing that we can experience?
I think it's a great opportunity to get people excited about science all across the board, like regardless of what your religious beliefs are. I think everybody's looking up in the sky over something like this, and it's hitting them that physics can be applied to these bodies in the sky that we just sort of take for granted every day, and that they do sometimes do things that we're not used to them doing. But still, when they do that, they're following laws of order, laws of nature that we study as scientists. I was reminded of a quote from Reverend George V. Coyne, S.J. in 1988. It's a pretty often quoted quote, but he says science can purify religion from error and superstition. Religion can purify science from idolatry and false absolutes. Each can draw the other into a wider world, a world in which both can flourish. And so I thought, I was thinking of that quote today. It was like, you when you have both faith and reason and science and you're looking up in the sky, I think it makes that beautiful sense that you're talking about. It's like you can see so much more.
I have never seen an eclipse. I mean, I saw the shadow of the eclipse today, and I remember seeing the shadow of a partial eclipse, you know, years ago when I was a kid in school, actually. But from what people said who were under the totality of the eclipse today, there's a real sense of awe that comes over people, like that the sense that the first of all, the temperature goes down. You immediately feel a significant mm-hmm. drop in temperature when the sun is completely covered. And animals apparently are very quiet. They suddenly get quiet. People get really loud, though. I mean, people start like cheering and all that. But one person was describing it, and I actually kind of want to see one of these eclipses now, as you're where the sun usually is, you know, you see this corona around where the sun usually is, and then you're looking as if you're looking in towards the center of the solar system, and you're seeing people. One woman said, I can see Jupiter right there, and I can see another planet there. And so you get a sense, it's almost like an epiphany kind of, oh, this is where I live almost. Oh, this is, it's always there, but I could never see it.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you fine now. All right, I tell you what, Dr. Chisenko, the eclipse has apparently messed with the phone system. We're gonna be fine, but we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back with miracles and science. We welcome your calls. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-31-TRUTH. We are going to get these phone issues straightened out, and I really do want to talk with Dr. Chisenko more about the combination of a kind of a scientifically fascinating thing and a thing that really validates science in an amazing way. When you see down to the second, they had perfectly predicted, you know, where this shadow would fall across the country, but also something that really opens people up to one another and to nature in a way, in a way that they listen to nature, maybe. And nature, as we know, as the scripture tells us, it's a communication. It's this communication of God to us. And so this moment, this kind of eclipse moment is a confluence of all of these different things, different approaches. I think we miss a lot of it if we only see it as science, if we don't see it as also a moment to appreciate creation. But we'll get Dr. Trosankos' view on that when we come back. Miracles and science is our topic this hour. 888-31-TRUTH, the number, and we'll be right back.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Are you coming to the Catholic Answers Conference this September?
You guys put on a great show, so it's well worth coming.
Very powerful, very motivational and moving.
I think it's awesome. It's been really amazing to get to know people from all across the country.
Every time somebody's speaker finishes, I feel like I want to cry just because of how happy I am.
It's been pretty phenomenal. Very educational, enlightening.
This year's conference is September 28th through the 30th here in beautiful San Diego, and we want to see you there. Seats are still available, but act now because they are going fast. Call us today at 1-888-291-8000 or visit CatholicAnswersConference.com now and reserve your spot.
This is where it starts, and it definitely has started for me.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 19:16, when a young man asked Jesus what good he must do to gain eternal life, Jesus told him to keep the commandments. The young man responded that he had observed all of them. Jesus then pushed the matter further by asking what he still lacked. Jesus said to him, "If you wish to be perfect, go sell what you have and give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me." the young man was downcast because he had many possessions. What possession do you have that threatens to compromise the giving of yourself unconditionally to him? It's helpful to remember that no matter what good it is, he is the source of every good. No matter what good appeals to us, it is only appealing because he is its source. Why not choose him directly so that our desire goes beyond just gratifying ourselves and becomes an act of love? I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Cy Kellett, your host, and we are discussing this hour, miracles and science, with Dr. Stacy Trisankos, our favorite scientist. I say that quietly, but our favorite scientist here on Catholic Answers. So, Dr. Trisankos, for probably centuries, isn't it true that eclipse of the sun would have just come on people suddenly? They didn't have any other indicators to say, oh, here comes an eclipse. It would be suddenly the sun would go out, really.
Yeah, and it would seem like the gods were messing with things, or maybe it was the end of the world. And that's where this idea came from in antiquity, that the celestial bodies were controlled by gods, or were giving predictions about the future or about what might happen with mankind. And that's where, in part, astrology was born, that people thought that you could look in the heavens and predict what was going to happen in a person's life. And that's totally opposite what the church teaches. We look at, there's a huge difference. It sounds like a small difference, but we look at nature as creation. We make a big difference between the creator and between creation. And if you don't have that difference clearly in mind, then you can succumb to the errors of pantheism very easily, where creation is suddenly on par with God, where creation is...
Well, creation can kind of lead us to spiritual experiences, like the experience of creation can lead us to
emanating from God, and it's no longer like the creation.
Nope, still got phone troubles here.
Okay, call me.
Yeah, we'll call you. But I think that's the point, though. That the fascinating point is that, you know, I always think of the psalmist, and I'm going to forget the number of the psalm now. The psalmist who says, "Day speaks of it today," meaning the day is telling us about God, and the day is telling itself about the beauty of God. Night to night shares the news, you know, so the night says to the night. This is a very Jewish appreciation of nature, and through the Jews, a Christian way of appreciating nature. That is, that the nature is telling us something about God. Nature is, in fact, because it's a creation, speaking to us about the divine. But nature is not itself the divine or the divinities, and the divinities are not within nature. So if you had, you know, I suppose you could, anybody from the Aztecs to the ancient Persians, ancient Greeks, would have seen an eclipse as a manifestation of divine power within nature. And we can see that it's not miraculous in that sense, but it is a window for us that open us to appreciate God, as everything in nature is, as the flower is, or as the little lizard crawling across the ground is. Everything in nature, it can open that appreciation in us to God if we'll allow it. We're the only creatures that can turn that off, actually. But it's not the gods working. That's the difference. Or it's not that the gods are in nature making these things happen.
Right. And that's what we have to keep in mind, what a miracle is. Because a miracle is something, it doesn't break any laws of nature. It's beyond the laws of nature, but it's completely within the supreme law, where everything submits to God's will, or everything is under God's providence. And so when you have a miracle, it's God moving something in ways that we don't know from science, and ways that are beyond science, but he does it for the sake of our salvation. He does it to lead people to heaven. So there's never any expectation that there's a nefarious reason, or he's trying to trick us or anything like that. It's always done out of love.
Well, 100 years ago, almost this month, there's the miracle of the sun in Fatima. And that's very different. Yeah. That's a completely different thing than what we experience today across America.
Yes. And that, you know, people still argue about what exactly happened at Fatima, but there's all kinds of ways that we could have miracles. But that one was different. Whatever happened there was different because there are certain parts of it that science could not explain. Some people do propose scientific explanations for certain things, but they still say that the bigger miracle was that so many people happened to be gathered that day to look for a miracle and to be drawn to God. But it really kind of begs the question, what is a miracle? And I like what St. Thomas Aquinas says, that a miracle is something beyond the order in nature that we know. And I think that we know part is very important because if you consider all of creation minus humans and just take humans and our free will and intellect out, then you do have pretty much, except for angels too, take out angels, you have pretty much a deterministic universe left. You have like Mars, where there's no living thing moving matter around with their own free will. But then when you think about a miracle like that, so we are kind of co-creators, like it says in the Catechism, with God too. When we move matter, like when we decide to scratch our face or cook dinner or grow a family, we are moving a whole lot of matter too. And in a way, that's kind of like a miracle, but it's not a miracle. A miracle then is easier to understand. It's when God moves matter beyond the ways that we understand in science. And I like thinking about it like that because if you understand creation and you look at nature and all this beauty and order and symmetry and creation, and you can look beyond that and say there must be a creator, I can see the hand of God here because I'm looking at science and it points me to God, then you also come to the only rational conclusion is that there have to be miracles. Like it would then not make sense. Creator, creation, it wouldn't make sense for there never to be a miracle because it would only make sense that, of course, God would occasionally intervene to show us he loved us.
But then when a miracle happens, like someone is healed and in the course of looking for the canonization of a saint, for example, we wait for a miracle for, say, Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, you know, Edith Stein, to become a saint. And we say, well, we need a miracle now to go from her being beatified to her being Saint Edith Stein. And then a miracle happens, and we do. The church does, in fact, turn to scientists at that point. So there is some connection here.
Yes, there is some connection because they try to rule it out. They try to say this can't be explained by science. And you know, I've been pressed on this point by atheists before. Well, doesn't that mean in the past that some things could have been ruled a miracle, but later science could explain them? Later we gained the knowledge to be able to explain what we once thought was a miracle? Well, the answer to that is that God knows what we know at any point in time. God's aware of the limits of our knowledge. And so I do think things that if something happens to inspire someone, to draw someone closer to God, then even if maybe there's a scientific explanation later, it could still be a miracle in the moment when it happened because it still fits the definition from St. Thomas. It's beyond what we know. It's something revealed to us that shows us, reminds us that God's there.
Well, a whole lot of people on the lines want to talk about miracles in science. Shall we go to the calls?
Okay.
Patricia in San Francisco, California, listening on 1260 AM. You are on with Dr. Stacy Trasankos. Your question, please.
Yes. I heard that Einstein was very religious and that he's quoted as saying that the more he studied science, the more he believed in God. And I believe it had something to do with the fact that the smallest particle of matter, I believe the atom, has vast space or energy between them that can't be measured. Is that correct, or am I mixing him up with someone else?
No, I seem to remember him saying something like that, but I'm not recalling an exact quote. But he did express often in his writing this awe and wonder at the amount of order in nature. And so talking about an atom, you know, he was involved in the dawn of quantum mechanics where some really crazy things were, frankly, physics as people understood it at that time was totally changing with the understanding of the quantum world. And so it does, you know, it would for Einstein, it did for many people, and frankly, I don't see how it wouldn't inspire someone to say what you just said. But when you learn about, and this is something I even tell like high school students when I'm teaching them about atoms, when you learn about the order and structure in just in the atoms, and you can even go down into all the hundreds of subatomic particles that have been discovered since Einstein, there is layer upon layer upon layer of order and symmetry. In the atoms, we have an explanation and a quantum number for every little thing those electrons could be doing, and we understand all of what's holding you together right now, what's holding the atoms together and the proteins that make us up. We understand those in terms of what electrons are doing. And so not just the vast space between the smallest particles, but the fact that everything we understand about those small particles is order upon order upon order.
Does that help? Does that fit with what you were thinking, Patricia?
It does. It does. It's just like there's no limit to learning about this life because God is vast and intimate. I mean, beyond understanding.
Yeah, indeed.
There's no end to our learning.
There was a thank you so much, Patricia, for that call. There, a great physicist, Freeman Dyson, said the universe is infinite in all directions. I mean, does that make sense to you?
It sounds like pantheism again to me. So that's one thing that I think in our day and age we have to guard against too much pantheism with the universe being infinite in all directions. I mean, and then you have to get into making a distinction between eternity and infinity, whether they're talking about. But I think, like, here's the way I look at it. When you study just science of the physical world, just of nature, biology, chemistry, and physics, there's a finiteness to it, but it points to something beyond it. I think that's what you're saying.
Well, it wasn't me. It was Freeman Dyson that said it, but
yeah.
That may be what he meant by that indeed. But that this finding of order, when you think about what a scientist does, the scientist assumes that if there's a question, there's an answer. And that strikes me that underneath all of this, there's an assumption of orderliness and what philosophers might call intelligibility. And if for everything to be intelligible, there has to be someone who put the intelligibility there.
Exactly. The biggest answer or the biggest question a scientist can ask is who created all of this? Because you spend your whole time as a scientist trying to develop things, trying to understand the laws of nature so you can manipulate them. And it's always right in front of you. It's like the elephant in the laboratory. Who created all this in the first place? Because everything you do is something that you have to learn and some structure you have to manipulate. And it's just the most natural, logical conclusion in the world for science to point you to God.
Gary, in Kennewick, Washington, you are on with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos. What's your question, please?
Yes, the solar eclipse involves, as you know, the relationship within our solar system. And one of the arguments that's made in the Privileged Planet book is that this is evidence of fine-tuning in the universe, where life is very rare. And do you believe that the solar eclipse is an example of that kind of relationship that makes the possibility of all this happening by randomness or accident very, very unlikely?
I think it's not just the eclipse. I think everything that happens, if you understood, and we don't completely, but if we understood everything that's going on within the atoms to hold our bodies together right now and keep our hearts pumping and our brains working, all of it gives testimony to unimaginable for us, unimaginable intelligent design. I'm not a big fan of the intelligent design arguments per se, because I think they don't go big enough. I think they pick around nature looking for evidence of intelligent design here and there. And meanwhile, I'm looking at a periodic table going, why not everywhere? Like, I think all of it's intelligently designed.
Gary, thank you very much for that question. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos is our guest this hour. We're discussing miracles and science on a day when, in a really cool way, lots and lots of people looking up to the sky because of the eclipse across America today. We only saw a little bit of it here in San Diego. We'd love to hear about it if you saw the full eclipse somewhere. 888-318-7884, the number. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Live Truth, Live Catholic, with trusted series, features, and specials from EWTN Home Video. The EWTN Home Video highlight for August is Battle Ready. In this spiritual boot camp, Doug Barry shows how you can be aware, prepare, and engage the enemy in battle. Order your DVD collection at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
This is apologist Tim Staples, and I'm here to tell you about the most exciting and innovative Catholic book in years. In today's world, people from countless perspectives pose challenges to our Catholic faith every day. In conversations, through the mass media, on the internet, and more on the infinite collection of social media platforms. There's no getting away from this daily onslaught. We as Catholics need to stand strong to be prepared to mount a daily defense, to respond to the many challenges that we as believers are presented with every day. To that end, my good friend and apologist extraordinaire Jimmy Akin has come up with what will surely be a go-to resource for years to come, a daily defense. A daily defense takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, 366 in all, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, with challenges and answers indexed alphabetically by scripture verses or by topic, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. You can still get that free Kindle copy of the Essential Catholic Survival Guide. It's just for a limited time. You go to Catholic.com, our homepage, just Catholic.com, and on the banner, you'll see there's a free copy of the Essential Catholic Survival Guide up on the top. It's for the Kindle, and you can use the Kindle on any computer, so you just get your Kindle edition right there. Just go to Catholic.com and click on the banner, and you can have the free edition of the Essential Catholic Survival Guide. Our guest this hour, Dr. Stacy Trusenkos, our favorite scientist, both a scientist and a theologian, and we're discussing miracles. We're discussing science. We're discussing whether we can be believers in both miracles and science. I think we've already said yes, so let's work out the details. Like, your answer is pretty immediately yes, right, doctor?
Yes, I go even further. It wouldn't make sense not to believe in miracles.
Right, exactly. So if the universe is created, I remember that. Now, you said that earlier. If the universe is created, then there is no way to think about the universe except that there are miracles in it. That's the way.
Yeah.
I suppose, is creation itself, I don't know, philosophically, do we say creation itself is a miracle because God makes everything that we know out of nothing?
You could make that argument. That's when you really get into the nuts and bolts of what the definition of a miracle is. But if you stick to St. Thomas's definition, that it's something beyond the laws of nature that we know, you could say that the very beginning was a miracle.
All right, let's go. The lines continue to be full, so I want to keep going to calls. Enrique in Lancaster, Texas, watching on YouTube Live. Thanks for watching on YouTube, Enrique. What's your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos?
Hello. Thank you for coming on and answering these questions. My question is, with the Eucharistic miracles that I've heard so much about, I've heard lots of stories about them, and I've tried to tell some atheist friends about that they're real and that they're like physical proof that God exists. And they tell me that the only sources they can find on it are Catholic sources. So are there any scientific journals where I can look at, that I can read and look over, that prove that these are like actual scientific studies and not just stories? Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to answer this in part. I do seem to remember seeing an obscure journal that had the report of a medical doctor that examined a Eucharistic miracle. I don't know it off the top of my head. I'll try to find it later. But the next thing I would say to that, maybe the reason why there aren't any scientific journals that substantiate these miracles is because of the scientific journaling itself. To publish in a scientific journal, a review board has to accept the paper. Now, I'm speculating here, but my guess is a review board would not accept a paper like that. Okay, so there's that. The other reason is, I imagine the church even would not want such a thing published in a scientific journal. Because when you publish something in a scientific journal, you sort of lose control over what's going to happen. Not that they have anything to fear about that, but as a matter of not spurring unneeded speculation or leading people down the wrong path or just stirring up sensationalism where it need not be stirred up. They may not even want those kind of things in scientific journals. But nevertheless, it doesn't take away from the scientific fact that these things have been analyzed and studied and do exist.
Does that make sense to you, Enrique?
Yes.
One of the Eucharistic miracles you might be referring to is Lanciano, which is really an extraordinary miracle in Lanciano, Italy. I have never been there myself, but where the Eucharist turned into the Eucharistic host turned into flesh and blood. I can tell you that was looked at by a doctor and a scientist. He was a PhD, I think PhD, MD, but a doctor scientist, an investigator who looked at the actual sample that they had there, and it was a cardiac muscle. It was a human cardiac muscle, type AB blood. And this is one of the odd things about Eucharistic miracles is when they test blood of Eucharistic miracles, it's always type AB. So there, and that's also, I should say, the same blood that's found on the Shroud of Turin. I'm not in any way saying I'm an expert on these things or anything like that. I'm just saying that that's what you find is type AB blood throughout when they test on these Eucharistic miracles. And you can find publishings from this doctor who investigated the material. What happened, for those who don't know, is that a host turned into actual flesh and blood in Lanciano, Italy, and it's still there in Lanciano so that you can examine it. And this doctor said it's a part of a cardiac muscle, part of the heart muscle, essentially. So, Enrique, you might want to look into that one. Thank you very much for that call. Let's go to Paul in Georgia, watching on YouTube. Paul, are you there with us? Okay. We're not going to go to Paul. Maybe it was a miracle. Maybe, well, I don't know. Probably wasn't a miracle. It was probably more likely that I pushed the wrong button. 888-318-7884, the number. We're talking science and miracles today with Dr. Stacy Trasankos. 888-318-7884. And Dr. Trasankos, again, we kind of connect this a little bit to the eclipse, and your position, at least from what I understood from what I asked you earlier, your position is that scientists can be involved with miracles, not to explain them, but to rule out other possibilities. And so because it would seem that lots of things that are claimed as miracles are in fact not miracles. Matter of fact, maybe we could go so far as to say most probably aren't. You know, when someone sees, let's just say the world famous face of Jesus in a piece of toast, that's not necessarily a miracle.
No, that would not qualify as a miracle. Now, someone may think of it as a miracle in the sense that something situational happened at just the right time in his or her life to open the eyes to see God. But that wouldn't technically be a miracle. And, you know, it gets complicated. Like when you start saying, what can science rule out? I guess there's always going to be an incompleteness to it, because if you're just trying to rule things out, you never know if someday you'll be able to rule it back in. Because miracles are not for order. They never were. They're beyond order. And so you can keep saying, this seems beyond what we understand in science. This seems beyond. You can keep saying that, but I guess always there could be some situation where there was a scientific explanation. But I always step back from that too and just say, yeah, but still, it wouldn't make sense not to believe in miracles. So whether you happen to catch one or not at a certain time, it's still true that they do happen. So to me, that just makes me look out for them in my life, like try to
see the miracles, because I think if we're watching for them, we will see them, even small ones in our life, just God tapping us on the shoulder to let us know that we're there.
So they're kind of like a communication, like a love communication in a certain way. Yeah. Many of these things that happen in our lives that give us a sense of God's presence. How about we go to Mike in Portland, Oregon, listening on 88.3 AM. Oh, that must got to be FM. Well, Mike, whether it's AM or FM, you are on with Dr. Chesenkos. What's your question?
I'd like to ask the doctor about miracles and in the natural order. Pretty much all the secular scientists, I believe, think there's black holes. And if that's the case, I'd really be interested in asking her opinion if there's a black hole large enough to swallow up a solar system or something larger. And where does the matter go if that's the case?
Are there black holes, Dr. Drusenkos?
Yeah, there are black holes in the sense that they are thought of as a region of space-time that exhibits some strong gravitational effect that nothing can escape from inside it. So it's a very strong gravitational field. Particles, electromagnetic radiation, none of that can escape, like light. Light can't escape from that very strong gravitational field in space-time. So, but it sounds like science fiction to us, I know. But to me, honestly, so do electron orbitals. They sound like science fiction to me, too, when I start thinking about what they really are and how we define them with quantum mechanics. And I'm not a cosmologist, so even on something like that, I accept that science defines something as a black hole, and I accept that it very likely can exist. I also accept that we're human and we just don't have all the answers either. I don't think that's a very satisfying answer, though, is it? And could they swallow up a whole universe? In theory,
solar
they
system
could.
Is what he. I think he solar just said system. Solar system.
Yeah, in theory, yeah, because there. Are, I mean, when you think about how many solar systems there are in the universe, I mean, there's billions of galaxies. So think about how many billions of solar systems are in the billions of galaxies.
How does that strike you, Mike?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Where does she think the matter goes after it enters the black hole?
Yeah, I don't know. You're pushing the limits of what I know there. But it would still be, so where does it go? It could convert to energy. I don't know where it goes. There's a, you know, when you get down into the quantum level, there's not a real clear line between matter and energy anymore because you have E equals MC squared. There's a certain energy equivalent for any small amount of matter. But that's about all I know about that. I don't really know much more about black holes. But I'm fine accepting that they exist as a matter of scientific explanation.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for that call. I feel smarter just because the phrase E equals MC squared came up on the show. That I already feel brighter, yeah. Even though I don't know. Well, I do. I know like what it means. I just don't know how it works. We'll be back. We got to take a quick break. More on miracles and science with Dr. Stacy Chesenkos right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers. Our success depends on you.
It's impossible to escape the fact that the Catholic faith is under attack today. All you have to do is glance at the news, look at the internet, or talk with people you know, and you'll encounter challenge after challenge. At Catholic Answers, one question we get all the time is how our experts went about learning the craft of apologetics. That's a question Catholic Answers founder Carl Keating has just given his answer to. It's found in his brand new book on the works that made him an apologist. Drawing on a lifetime of experience, Carl reveals the books that helped him learn to defend the Catholic faith. He also recounts numerous anecdotes, real-life situations he has encountered in his long career that illustrate the apologetic lessons he learned. Catholic Answers needs your help to do all of its apostolic work, including producing fascinating and informative books like this. To make your donation and get free copies of Carl Keating's new books, visit Catholic.com and click the Carl Keating banner or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Carl Keating banner at Catholic.com or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Christian men, beware.
With the idols of materialism, entertainment, and the flesh, it's plain to see that the world wants you for its own. Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terrence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, Lessons to Young Men About Life, Sex, Friendship, Vocation, and Loving with the Heart of Christ, Father Ehrman draws on his experiences counseling men who are struggling to live in the world but not be of the world. In a unique format, he offers a plan for ongoing conversion, holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
It's a really good Monday. Whenever you have a total eclipse that goes across your country, it's a good Monday. That's better than a usual Monday. But it's also a good Monday because we got Dr. Stacy Trasankos here with us this hour. Next hour, Dr. Timothy Gray will be here to answer this question. Can you trust God? I think that's pretty basic. That's a pretty basic one. I'm looking forward to hearing. I know that the answer is going to be yes, but I'm looking forward to the explanation and his confidence that we can trust in God, Dr. Gray, right after Stacy Trasankos this hour. This hour, we're talking about miracles and we're talking about science, miracles and science with Dr. Stacy Trasankos. And we have a caller from off the continent. So we go to that caller first, Renato in Paraguay, watching on YouTube online. Hi, Renato. Thank you for watching on YouTube. What's your question for Dr. Stacy?
Hello, good evening, Thai. Good evening, Doctor. Pleasure to hear you. Very, very interesting. I was asking, would it be fair to say that skepticism on part of the scientific community in general towards the religion and the Catholic Church in general, would it be fair to say that it's a consequence of, say, the Church's skepticism towards science when people like Galileo Galilei showed up with all new theories that were discarded a priori back in the day?
I think it is fair to say, yes, that the current skepticism from the scientific world, they blame it on Galileo. It's fair to say that they do blame it on the Galileo affair to a large extent. That's always the fallback. That's always the go-to issue that people who are skeptical of the Church point to when it comes to science. But I think there's something more to it too. I don't think it's just Galileo. I think that it's also this divide between faith and reason, between philosophy and theology, this divide that started back with David Hume and Rene Descartes back in that time when scientism really started to rise. Well, we had the scientific revolution in the 16th and 17th century. I try not to get upset about it, but I try to look back and think about what must have been going on in their minds. All of a sudden, there was this great new way to know things, this great new way to acquire new knowledge. And Francis Bacon said, I think it was him, who said that makes us, that puts a divide between two ways of knowing. There's one way to study the things we already know. He was talking about theology and philosophy. And there's another way to know new things. And that sounded so much more exciting. And it kind of, that thinking, and then combine that with the thinking of empiricism, where the only kind of knowledge we can be sure about is what we can sense. That led to this divide between faith and science in general. And I think we get to our current day today, kids in school from kindergarten on up are taught with that divide. They're taught in the air and the spirit of faith and science being two totally separate things. Faith is like whatever you opine or want to believe, and then science is what we know because we can see it in their minds. And I think that's done even more to give this skepticism towards this perceived idea that there's a skepticism on the Church's part towards science. There's actually not, though.
Renato, how does that strike you?
Oh, that sounds fantastic, and I thank you very, very much for the exhaustive answer. Thank you very, very much.
Well, hang on. Don't go yet, Renato, if you can afford the phone bill for a second longer. The one thing that you said, though, you said the church rejected Galileo and scientists like him a priori, meaning without even considering their ideas. I would just like to throw this out to both of you. That's not really what happened with Galileo. I mean, the church made a terrible mistake, the authorities did at the time,
right.
But there was long investigation of his ideas. It wasn't dismissal. Am I correct in my history there?
The church said to Galileo, before you expect us to reanalyze dogma, you need to prove what you're saying. I mean, that's all they said. Like, you can't just come along and say, hey, I have this new theory, and I want the church to reassess everything you think you know about doctrine. The church said, well, we're not going to do that. You need to prove your scientific theory before we'll even start to think about it. But the church also said, if you can prove your theory, if you can prove that we have understood something new about the world, then, yeah, we'll reconsider what we understand about theology. Like, maybe that scientific understanding will deepen our understanding of what God revealed. And I've read the documents between the people, and there was all kinds of that dialogue back and forth. It just came down to Galileo, in part, I'm oversimplifying it, Galileo thought he proved it, and he hadn't.
Renato, does that match up with your understanding of Galileo?
Yes, actually it does. Actually, my choice of words there with the a priori was actually a mistaken word. Yes, I also agree. And I also think that the relationship between the science world or scientists back in the day of Galileo and the church was a much tighter or different scene altogether than what we have nowadays. So I think that must have also influenced the way the whole thing looked at the eyes of the world.
That's a very, very good point. Renato, thanks very much for that call. Really, that's kind of exciting. We get for you watching us there on YouTube in Paraguay. I'm still impressed with all this internet stuff. Chuck in, we'll go to Chuck. Chuck in Mobile, Alabama, listening on 1410 AM Archangel Radio. You are on with Dr. Stacy Trusenko. So your question, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Doctor, I thought that I heard you say something on another show some time back, and the comments about the blood type in the Eucharistic miracle, I just couldn't get by without asking this today if I could get through. My understanding of Catholic doctrine is that all of mankind descended from a common pair. And I thought I heard you say on another show that there was some scientific evidence that mankind on Earth today may not have come from a single pair of humans. And I wondered if I misheard what you said. And I had a follow-up to that question, it connected to this same line of thought.
Okay, let me answer it quickly then. What I have said about that is that evolutionary science is unable to find a first pair. Like, expecting evolutionary science with its mechanisms and everything we can do with evolutionary science, with the genetic studies and the fossil records, expecting it to ever find a first pair of humans is kind of like expecting a bulldozer to isolate two grains of sand on a beach. Like, it just can't be done. It's the wrong tool. It would never find them. So I'm saying that to make the point that if there was a first pair, a first man and woman, and evolutionary science said, no, there couldn't have been, that doesn't prove there wasn't.
Chuck? Okay. I think I need to chew on that a little while. As a follow-up, I actually have a degree in biology, and I was always taught and have always read that the definition of a species is basically that you produce fertile young, and members of opposites, or not opposite, members of different species by definition could not produce fertile young. Do you follow me so far? Does that make sense, that pre-statement? The question then is, I've seen some material recently about human and Neanderthal
interaction, and that humans may have Neanderthal DNA. And so my question is, how do we trust a scientific community and all of its day-to-day, you know, new so-called new discoveries, when I can pick up a publication and it says humans, today's modern mankind, may contain Neanderthal DNA if they were a separate species? Do you follow what I'm asking?
I do, and I remember reading those papers, and that you're right. They come out all the time. Almost every week you see some new paper discussing that. There is evidence, that genetic evidence, that Neanderthals and humans, or what prehumans, mated. They didn't mate to the point where they produced the new species themselves, but there can be some of that. There could have been some, and that's what those studies are aimed at. Like, why do we find this Neanderthal DNA? How come it came to be? Why is it there? What do we make of it? Did it provide certain groups of humans with traits that allow them to survive in certain climates, like really cold climates? They're asking those questions, but they do find DNA that seems to be Neanderthal DNA in the human genetic record. And so my take with stuff like that, I remember that science is provisional. Science is always changing. Science never has the last word on anything. So I just keep up with that stuff. I read it to see what they're saying, and follow it and see where it's going. But I never, ever, ever stop believing that God created everything and that he holds everything in existence. I just accept that the science is not complete there. And I don't see any contradiction for that reason, because I don't make too much of it. It's possible that they could have made it, of course, but it shouldn't shake our faith.
Thank you very much for that call. I'm going to go quickly because I'd like to get another call in before the top of the hour. Charlie in Houston, listening on Guadalupe Radio, you are next. What's your question for Dr. Stacy Trisenkos?
Hey, so in the late 1980s, I was in Medjugorje, Yugoslavia, and I was praying, and I saw this group of people standing in front of me, and all of a sudden they started looking at the sun and marveling and all that. I went over and stood next to them, and I tried to look at the sun, and it was so bright, I mean, I could not even look at it. I had to put my hand in front of my face, and they must have looked at it for like 20 minutes. When they were done, you know, I asked them what they saw, and they said, oh, it was beautiful, it was colorful, dancing all around, and all this stuff, and none of them had any eyesight problems. I mean, you know, I had a spot from the little bit I was trying to look at the sun. But I guess my question is there a scientific explanation for something like that, or can I be pretty confident I witnessed a miracle?
Well, I'm going to answer it, Stacy Trisenkos. If it were me, I would probably consider it a miracle, because I don't think there's any way you could look at the sun directly for that long and not suffer eye damage, to my knowledge. And I'm not saying it absolutely was or it wasn't. I'm saying if I were there, I would be thinking the same thing you're thinking.
Thanks very much, Charlie. Sorry we had to go so quickly, but that was a pretty quick answer, Dr. Trisenkos. Thanks very much for being with us again on Catholic Answers Live.
That's Thank you.
Oh, I was. I thought I might have put you to sleep there for a second. You got to come back next month. I insist upon it.
Okay.
All right. See you next month. It's fun having you on every month.
Thank you.
Next hour, can you trust God? I believe the answer is going to be yes, but it's the why that matters. Dr. Timothy Gray, the director of the Augustine Institute, will be here to discuss, can you trust God, and take your questions on that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.